It's time to think big with Big Alaska guests, Big Alaska adventures, and no good lying through your two tall Alaska tales. It's the Big Alaska Show. Broadcasting from the studios of a remote cabin outside Bolchitna and streamed worldwide at KFQD.com with podcasts streamed at BigAlaskaShow.com, I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Stevens and Big Alaska Show friends. We visit our Big Alaska Show book review section featuring author Lois Simonson, a.k.a. Lolo Page. Deadliest catch mythbuster Mike Ferris joins us for another commercial fishing close call. And then Mike Ferris sheds the hard bark of commercial fishing to be good citizen Mike Ferris with his rootin' tootin' rotary update. Designed to raise your spirits, not your blood pressure, unless you're a guy named Mike Ford. Good morning, everyone. It's the Big Alaska Show.
And good morning and welcome to the Big Alaska Show. I am Uncle Steve, along with my good buddy co-host Mike Ford, who has just returned from a beard mustache contest. What's the official name of this year's contest, Mike?
It was the Beards, Booze, and Bacon Festival. Of course, you didn't have to incorporate the booze part of it if you didn't want to.
Right.
And that was at the Sullivan Arena. It's the first time I've been there since they reclaimed it from helping folks who live on the street. It's nice to get back to the Sully and go out there. But gosh, Uncle Steve, they had more than a dozen vendors inside, all sorts of bacon and beer opportunities for folks, and even beard oil booths. Yeah,
they had a booth for beard oil.
Yes. And they were helping people get their beards looking all sharp. And of course, since it was in the Sully, it was a lot larger situation than in years gone by. And the Lions, of course, always helping with that thing squared away. And it's a good fundraiser for them. And the South Central Beard and Mustache Club was the big part of that. And with 13 categories, it took us a while to get through them all. And I'll send you a picture of Mr. Furface. There should be more pictures and videos on the way. And I'm okay. A little behind the curve on getting all that.
When I asked you, you said you only got one picture. And I said, you only got one picture. And you said, well, I was talking for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, because they've added all these other elements. It wasn't just a straight up beard thing. You know, you're inviting people to do this and you're inviting people to do that. They had music. They had all sorts of things. So it was just kind of getting to know things, and they'd say, oh, can you do this? Can you announce that? And then we had and each category, of course, you had to get the people with the beards down in front of the stage so that other people could come up and pet their beards and feel their beard.
Yeah, baby.
And so that yeah, lengthened baby. Each category considerably. And yeah. Then the judges, I think there was only one of the four judges had actually judged this opportunity before. So you had him kind of training the other three. And so it was a work in progress, but it was all for a good cause, very entertaining. And I got to say, my favorite, though, was the Pyrite Pioneer category. And that's, you know, mostly ladies. I think there was one dude in that one, but they, you know, would come up with these fake beards they'd fabricated on their own, made of flowers. One lady had a beard made of small flags, and she was celebrating the Independence Day early, I guess. Everybody had a fantastic time, and like I said, it helped the Lions to go out and do all the great things they do. They have like 17 chapters in Alaska now. Lions,
they're active now. Let me ask you, I've been thinking about this, because really what this was like going to the state fair, and yeah. a couple of thoughts. One of them is, when you go to the state fair, there's that one woman who has her salon, and she does all the pink hair and the hair sticking up and all the right. creative things and stuff. Did they have something like
they
that?
They did have something like that. Yes.
All right.
And there was a line around the corner for that one.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Now, the other question I've got for you, because you're the one that's always coming up with these ideas that every time we talk, you always talk about these different ways of making money, because
you know that comes from my theta waves, Uncle Steve. I'm developing my theta waves, which they say when you're a kid, supposedly, all the kids have an immense amount of theta waves, until they learn the ways of the world and they're told, you know, don't think like that, Bobby. Susie, sit down and shut up. Okay. And so I'm reacquainting myself with the, you know, that there was that book years ago that said I learned everything I needed in kindergarten. And the longer I live, the more I believe that's probably true. And so these ideas, that's where they emanate. I just wanted to share that.
Well, let me ask you, my only concern about the theta waves.
Yes.
Does that include potty training?
I'm pretty certain it does. And probably the people that came up with potty chairs were using their theta waves, you know?
The other income producing one I was talking about, because you said that they had people coming up to the front so people could come and pet their beards, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And so let me ask you, is it inappropriate to ask for a beard petting booth?
A beard petting booth. I think, no, I already encouraged that during the event. I said next year we just have to have the after party petting part.
Well,
that's an additional charge. That could be actually the bonus fundraising element, right?
The after hours beard petting booth.
Did you want beard oil with that, sir?
I'm dying, man. No, this is awesome. By the way, you know, you did take some pictures in the past. I've got to go find them because they were terrific. I mean, these guys have hair.
Oh, it's amazing. And I got to say, my bride just doesn't like facial hair. And that's pretty much, but I could never, even in my wildest dreams, grow a beard like these guys. You know, it's pretty impressive stuff. I had a little bit of beard envy going on there. Last week.
This has always been associated with the Fur Rendezvous over the years in the past, but they moved this event.
Right. So that they could get people to qualify for the World Beard and Mustache contests.
Come to Alaska in the summer.
You know, yeah. Reason that they decided not to do it in the middle of winter. And they just wanted to get it done before everybody gets out and goes fishing and camping and hiking. And yeah, it's nice to see the Sullivan Arena opening up. They're going to have a lot of stuff going on throughout the summer. So that was nice.
Now, the other one that I always liked was the Mr. Soup Strainer.
Yes, which is just the mustache.
Yeah. And was that a sizable stash?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. Yes. Now, your job was...
I interviewed pretty much all of them. And that's one thing I'm going to work on. And I'm going to elevate my theta waves towards better interview questions for next year. Some of the ladies were very entranced by the beards too. And one of the judges had to remind them that, you know, there's going to be more categories. So please, you know, go back to your seats. And it was good.
Yeah. It's going to be a long evening, but it sounded well attended.
Oh yeah. It was a pretty good crowd, you know,
yes.
But
okay.
Yeah. So I think next year will be even bigger and better.
And the impact of inspiring a younger generation to start growing hair.
Start growing their facial hair, yes.
And just remember, don't be discouraged to learn that there's a population of women who are not fond of facial hair. Anyway, thanks for everybody joining us in the Big Alaska Show. But of course, Mike, we'd be remiss if we didn't start the Big Alaska Show out the right way.
That's right. We never let Harley near this coffee.
Beagle gas. Folks, the key to doing an early morning radio show, especially an early Saturday morning radio show, is a strong cup of coffee. And there's no stronger cup of Joe than Big Alaska Show Blend, the intense early morning coffee for intense early morning indigestion. That's why it's preferred coffee for Alaskan authors. Writing is no easy task, and waking up early to put words together that actually make sense sometimes requires a little motivational attitude adjustment. Enter Big Alaska Show Blend to the rescue. Just one sip of this caffeine-packed pile of dirt jumpstarts wordsmiths with an energetic boost to generate flowing phrases that may not make any more sense, but will certainly blister the ears of the censors. Bitter biting with a specific gravity of basalt. Big Alaska Show Blend. The intense early morning coffee for intense early morning gas.
Pour me a cup. It's time to get. Yeah.
And that's how we roll here at the Big Alaska Show. But stick around, we have more Big Alaska Show coming up. And you can hear our show streamed and get podcasts at BigAlaskaShow.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Neighbors Windows and Doors. They're Alaska's window experts for windows, doors, shower doors, affordable glass replacement. Neighbors Windows and Doors at 6251 Tunnel or online anytime at neighborswindowsanddoors.com.
And welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. Our deadliest catch Mythbuster has returned to share with us another episode of Close Calls with a Fearless Commercial Fisherman, Mike Ferris. We're here with our deadliest catch Mythbuster, Mike Ferris, third generation Kodiak fisherman. And we all know, even as laypersons, commercial fishing is a dangerous occupation. But just to know how dangerous it is, we go to our deadliest catch Mythbuster, Mike Ferris. Before long, you're going to be going out and fishing. What's today's close call?
Well, I wanted to talk about something that happened. It was probably late 90s, early 2000s. Back, we had the original Norinrad 1.0, which is a bow picker. So the cabin was on the back of the boat, and it was a unique design. Most people had cabins that went all the way across. Ours was a little smaller. We had a setting trough so we could actually set the net off the stern, which most people weren't able to do. And the bunks ran parallel across the boat, side to side at the back of the cabin. And there were three bunks there. We normally had four, sometimes five people on the boat. We only had three bunks. So the galley table would break down. We'd take cushions. My brother always slept there. But one night we're running, we're up north. It's late at night and it's dark. And this boat was one of the original jet boats. It was a bow picker. It can go really fast in the shallow water. And we're driving at night, and Bristol Bay is always foggy. It's rainy. You're trying to guess. I don't know if you've ever driven down to Alyeska. You know, you drive down to Portage, you go see that. And sometimes it's hard to tell how much water, where's sand, because they kind of blend together. Right as that water's coming off the sand's still wet, so it's kind of shimmery. So now imagine at night trying to make that guess. What's where? And then just after low water. So now a gray sandbar at night looks the same color as gray water at night. It's all black. So we're flying through, trying to take my best guess of where I am at night, headed back, flying back to the cannery, go get some sleep. And now you're not doing it like a normal boat, right? At 5 or 8 knots, maybe, 10 miles an hour. We're doing it at 25 knots. Closer to 30 miles an hour. I'm driving, flying through here. All of a sudden, it was smack stop, 30 miles to zero. Well, I'm driving the boat, so I just did a chest implant on the steering wheel. Boom. My brother, I think, was laying down. He was at the galley table, so he went flying to the top of the table, hit the wall. One of the kids was in the bottom bunk, and so he just went scooting across the floor, but we had three bunks. So one's on the floor. I slept in the middle bunk about 3 feet off the floor. And the other guy was in the top bunk 5 feet off the floor. So he's laying there with no guardrails. And we go from 30 miles an hour to zero. Mm-hmm. And I saw him as I'm implanting on the steering wheel. I just saw this blur go head level because I'm sitting down. So this kid went from the back of the wheelhouse, which is probably 12 feet long, in a straight line right past me and crumpled into the front of the wheelhouse. I mean, if it was me or you right now, Steve, we would be dead.
Yes.
We would have broken back, broken neck, broken arms. I was like, oh my God, is he alive? He hit that wall so hard. You can imagine 30 miles an hour in the air and then just a solid aluminum wall smack. And I'm thinking, oh my God, is he alive? And he's like, yeah, I think so. And we're like, oh my God. He's like 14 or 15 at the time. Anybody older than that probably would have been dead. I learned a valuable, valuable lesson. I very rarely run at night that fast anymore. And if I do, everybody is standing up and everybody has a brace and say, guys, if we stop, we're going to stop hard. But I continue to think this, his dad was a wrestling official. I was still officiating some wrestling back then. So his dad actually went to the same church we did in Kodiak, which is how we knew him. My brother was a teacher at the high school or at the junior high at the time. And just last year, I ran into him. His daughter was wrestling. I was officiating a match, and it was one of the Probasco kids. I go, oh, which one? He goes, no, I was the one on that bunk that went flying by and hit the front of the cabin. I'm like, God, I thought you were dead. He goes, yeah, I did too. I go, I don't know how I got up from that. So with extremely close call. It could have been just hit your neck a little different, something a little different. Now I got a dead 14-year-old on my boat. Close as we get, and I was so thankful that he was able to get up. We get up the next morning, he's working like nothing happened.
Were you stuck?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were there for another 10 hours or something, waiting for the tide to come back in. 30 miles an hour, watching some guy go flying right by your head. Nothing stopping him, and go smack in the aluminum wall. Not a great feeling.
Any sense of what the season's predicting to be like as far as fish?
Down maybe 20% forecast from last year. We've just had record years, which is one of the reasons prices are so bad. So I think it will probably be an okay year, but you never know, right? I've had supposed to be bad years. We caught lots of fish. We've had supposed to be good years and haven't caught that many fish. So you have to go out, put your net in the water and hope for the best. If you're not an optimist, you're probably not going to be a very good fisherman. It ain't always good.
Yeah,
no, but you got to keep thinking next year is going to be better.
Yes. Well, we'll catch up with you right before you take off. And once again, another close call with our deadliest catch mythbuster, Mike Ferris. Let's give Mike Ferris a big Alaska Show thank you and continued success.
Welcome back to the Big Alaska Show. I'm Mike Ford with Uncle Steve. Our show brought to you in part by Alaska Enterprise Solutions. They're your authorized sales agent for Xerox in Alaska. Call Mike Ferris or visit him anytime at aesalaska.com.
Hey, thanks again for joining us on the Big Alaska Show. Just remember, you can hear our podcast. Just go to bigalaskashow.com and you'll find the podcast menu. By the way, great for road trips. Just load up a few and let them roll. We also have on our website a nifty book review section featuring Alaskan authors and books, including our next guest, Lois Simonson, a.k.a. Lolo Page. And it's always fun catching up with Lolo. Our guest is an author who has books on our Big Alaska Show book review section because she's a discerning citizen. She respects the marketing prowess that the Big Alaska Show has. I mean, it's a small little book review section, I admit, but they say that inflation is caused by just printing lots of money. And the more you print of it, the less value it has. And so with that reasoning, here at the Big Alaska Show, is the fewer listeners we have, the fewer book reviews we have on our book review section, the more valuable.
That's good logic.
Yeah. And explains to you why I drive a 2001 Buick Century. But let's give a warm Big Alaska Show welcome to Lois Simonson, a.k.a. Lolo Page. My plan originally was to go back and just kind of remind people of the books we already have in the book review section, because the tendency for you authors, you're always pushing the new one. And but we feel that when we really think about it, more people have not read your older books than have read them, right?
That's a safe assumption, yeah.
Yeah. and with the 8 billion that exist in this universe, most have not read your books. So we thought, it important that we let people know the books we do have on our Big Last Show book review section, but only to find out that you have a new book coming out.
I do.
And so now let me ask you, should we start with your new book first and then talk about the other two? Or should we talk about the other two and kind of refresh people? Because they can go to the book review section and listen to the interviews we've got with you, which is, they're great.
Oh, sure. Oh, thank you. Well, they've been so much fun. I have so much fun doing these with you.
We have fun with you because you and I've talked about the challenge of writing and marketing. In fact, the one question I've asked all of you authors is, what's more challenging, writing the book or marketing it? And you all say yes.
That's right.
I have such a deep respect for authors and writers, and I especially have a deep respect for you because you come off a career. You worked for the feds or the state?
The feds, Department of the Interior.
Yeah. So you had this, you know, this job that's, you probably enjoyed the job, but it wouldn't be a passion like you have for writing your books. So anyway, you retire from that job and you jump in and decide you're going to write books. And I still remember when you started, you're going to these various workshops and you're studying stuff. And you're such, have you always been a really good student?
No, I was, no. In fact, I was put on probation my first semester at the University of Montana. My grades weren't that good as a graduating senior in high school.
Yeah, but you did pursue it like a good student. And lo and behold, I always love the story you have. And you go to Big Alaska Show and hear the podcast, because I don't want to repeat too much of this, but how you determined you were going to go into writing romance novels. A woman suggested this to you, right?
Yes, yes. A real famous writer. Her name was Heather Graham, not the actress, the writer. And she's written, I don't know, some 300 romantic suspense, crime suspense books. And yeah, I was at a writer's conference down there in Pasadena, California. And she was wrapping up a signing that she was doing in the lobby as I was coming down there to get a glass of wine. And I had the wine in my hand and I walked up to her and I handed it to her. And I said, if I bribe you with this glass of wine, can you please tell me how to publish this book I wrote about firefighting in Alaska? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and she said, make it a romantic suspense in the romance genre. And I looked at her like, oh gosh, you know what? I don't read it. I don't write it. And she goes, learn. So she told me to come home and do that. And so I did. I mean, you know.
See, that's my point. That's my point. You listened. They say, gather the wood, go.
Well, yeah, she said it was the highest selling genre in the commercial fiction market, and I'd have a better chance of getting readers for that book than I would had I just stuck it in women's fiction or something like that. So, and she's right. She's mm-hmm. right. And it still is. I just read some analytics last week about the romance genre, and it's growing at an ever rapid rate, with authors and more subgenres inside of it, and readers are they just devour these books.
I'm wondering, so when you're writing these and she's saying, you said you looked at all these analytics, did you sort of plot out, okay, they say this percentage watch reaches this and this is the age groups and all that stuff, so I'm going to create my characters and fit in these boxes?
Well, you learn as you go. And when I started 4 years ago with the first Alaska Spark book, I really didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to write the story, get it out there. And then I learned as I went. And then somebody said, when's the next book? And I just stared at him like, what do you mean, where's the next book? You know? And so like, oh, I have to write a series?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all righty then. So I did, and then my husband, I have to give him credit. He goes, well, why don't you base your stories on different fires that have happened around Alaska, the most notorious ones? And so when I started doing that, the puzzle pieces were falling into place, because then I could go all around the state, and it was so much fun because I work fires in the interior mainly and down here in South Central. And then I took them down to the Kenai Peninsula, and then I based the last one, Alaska Blaze, on the McKinley fires a couple years ago, and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's been, it's just been a you learn as you go thing,
Okay, so we have Alaska Spark, We've got Alaska Inferno.
Right. Alaska Blaze.
We got Alaska Blaze and now Alaska Bombshell. No, it's not.
Firestorm.
Oh, yeah. Firestorm. Was Alaska Spark built on a particular forest fire or wildfire?
It was more or less based on my experiences fighting fire up the Eielson fire back in late 88. It was a long time ago. You know, I kind of updated everything and made it sound current. I mean, there has been more fires in that area since then. But yeah, I just drew on that. And, you know, and since I started training in Missoula, I put that aspect in there with my character and all that. And it was just easier to write what you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And since I had all these experiences, I just wove them in there. And the experiences I did not have, like the burn over in a fire shelter, that kind of thing, I interviewed other firefighters who had survived that. And so that was like one of the highlights of writing that book, is talking to these other people, interviewing the Alaska smoke jumpers that I talked to, that kind of thing. It was so much fun. Everybody wants you to succeed when you're doing something like this, so they're really willing to help you out.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in Fred Meyer a couple days ago, and I spotted a firefighter from the Alaska Department of Natural Resources. I flagged him down, and I'm like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? I have some questions. And he was wonderful. And so we just stood there in the cashier line, you know, while we're doing groceries, and I'm asking them all these questions about DNR and their aerial fleet and all this stuff. It was fun.
That's what's really interesting about your career, the background in forest fires, going to college and working in it, in the industry, getting into the oil leasing industry?
Well, when I worked for the Bureau of Land Management, after I went from being a seasonal to a permanent employee with them, I got into oil and gas adjudication here in Alaska. And that was leasing lands for potential oil and gas, onshore oil and gas development. And then from there, I just kind of did different things with BLM and eventually transferred over to the Minerals Management Service, who did offshore oil and gas leasing. So I did their environmental impact statement for an area that they called North Aleutian Basin, and it was Bristol Bay.
North Aleutian Basin.
But I didn't know that. Let's take advantage of the new person.
Yeah, so really. There's a reason why they called it that.
Oh, my God. It was the most controversial thing, as you can imagine. That's it's world-class salmon fishery, for crying out loud. So, yeah. And so they threw me to the wolves on that one. But then, you know, you learn. And I took a lot of pride in my work because, you know, holding industry's feet to the fire with compliance and protecting the environment while you develop resources is huge. And that's what our mission statement was, basically.
Sure. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. You know, it was fun.
Have you thought about writing a book around that?
You know, my previous boss at BLM, I saw him down at the gas station here in Eagle River, and we're pumping gas, and he goes, you know, when are you going to write a book set along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline or out there or up there on, you know, up by on the Arctic Ocean and all that? And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. I think other people have written about, I can't remember the author's name, Murder on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm just...
Well, the woman who gave you the original advice will make a romantic suspense out of it. You know, there has to be some kind of like hot spark with people going over leases.
Yeah. Well, but it's such a controversial thing. And you know, I don't know, oil and gas isn't popular these days in our country. So, I'm kind of not interested in doing that, but wildfire seems to be growing.
One of the conversations you and Stan and I were having is when it comes to controversial topics, especially during an election and you know, and we stay away from politics on the Big Alaska Show.
Yeah.
We let everybody else do the dirt, you know. We've got our own dirt here in the Big Alaska Show. For an author, do you have to evolve?
What I like to do is take the pulse of my readers. And it was hard to do that in the beginning, but now that I've been doing this for a couple of years, and I really try to develop those relationships and talk to them. And I do that through my newsletter subscriber list. And I chat with them. I invite them. Let's open a discussion on things. And I threw it out to them about, do you want me to talk about things of a controversial nature when it comes to fighting wildfire? And most of them said, absolutely not. We are reading the romance genre for a reason. We want to be entertained. We love how you educate us while you're entertaining us. And we love the romance and we love the heat level. Not fire heat level, the other heat level.
Yes.
I write medium heat, by the way. I don't.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you don't do firecracker shrimp. Take me to, this is now part of the Blazing Hearts Wildfire series, and this is Firestorm.
Yes.
Give us a little rundown about Firestorm.
Well, I just revealed the cover today, so I haven't really revealed the blurb or the premise or anything quite yet. I'm kind of unfolding that as I go. But there's hints on the cover of that thing, which what I told my newsletter folks today was, if you take a peek over on the left lower part of the cover, you'll see Anchorage. So there's a clue for you about where this story might be occurring. So that's all I'm saying for now, because
that gives it completely away. There's a little picture of Anchorage over there in the right-hand corner, you know, and so there's...
Well, and there's the typical, forest lands and boreal forest stuff all around it and everything else, but... I really do pick different geographical parts of Alaska because I really like to educate readers that don't live here about what it's like to live in those areas of Alaska, what it's like to visit them, what the flora and fauna is like, you know, just give them a feel for it.
Flora and fauna.
The twins in the Addams Family. My favorite movie, one of my favorite movies.
I noticed this with Mark Cameron's books. He writes about Alaska, his stuff. And so he'll bring in various areas that I'm familiar with, you know, that he'll talk about the Salty Dog Saloon in Homer or some, you know, I mean, to somebody who's not familiar with it, they have a completely different perspective of what that is.
Mark has a real unique way of describing things. He transports you to that area. When I was reading the one he had set in Southeast, I can't recollect the name of it at this moment, but it was an Arliss Cutter. Yeah. I was transported down there, and I've only visited down there a couple times, but he put me on the beach. He put me exactly. Yeah. He's outstanding.
I know
he'll probably hear this and go, you guys didn't remember.
Yeah, we couldn't. Well, I'm gonna tell him, man, listen, we talked about you, Cameron, and you weren't there. Just, it's a typical thing. We've appointed you to a board position.
Ruh-roh.
Those of us who have not been in the firefighting or wildfire industry, when are you too old to fight fires?
You know, it's funny you should ask that question because the gentleman I talked to a couple days ago, I decided Open Carry. That's the name of Mark's book.
Yes, I was gonna say it's not Breakneck. It was
Open Carry. I had to Google it. Sorry, Mark, if you're listening.
Yeah, that's okay.
But anyhow, yeah, I talked to this guy and he said, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm kind of when I first started out with these books, mostly, well, it's college kids, you know, wanting seasonal work and summertime work is who mainly starts out in seasonal firefighting jobs. But, you know, they've turned into year-round firefighting jobs in some areas like California and other places. So I would say age 20 through, if I were 45, yeah. You know, there are 50-year-olds that are still in the game, boots on the ground. But by that time, if they've stuck with it long enough, they've moved up into the management positions. And so who are still on the ground, but they're, you know, they have the strike teams and all that underneath them. But yeah, I'm kind of inching up to a little bit older characters in my books now that I know who my readers are. And
a couple of requests I have is, one, my character Stink Eye, I think you should incorporate him in one to your You know, and you talk about the medium fire. You should have him in the background singing, "I don't look good naked anymore." You know, and the other...
there are firefighters who really do sing like that out on the line. You'd be surprised what you hear out there. Oh my God!
Now you got me thinking about this. Is what are you going to call the book that deals with senior citizens, like the firefighters who've retired? They go to a 30th anniversary of some kind of reunion, and sort of like The Hangover.
Yeah. Alaska Sparkless or something like that. Yeah. The Firewalkers of a Different Kind.
So this new book of yours, Firestorm, when can we get it?
Well, I know this sounds crazy, but I'm writing two books at the same time right now. I'm writing a historical fiction and this book. And so I kind of go back and forth between them. But I'm hoping to have this one done by the fall. It's a little bit later than I normally do. I normally release them in May or June, but this is going to take a little longer because I'm doing this other project. So hopefully by September, October.
Like I told you, when my wife walked in, when I first met you and I started reading your first romance book, and she stopped and looked at me and says, "Is that a romance novel?"
Right.
And she, you know, she never, but they can find the other books. They're good interviews with you. They're great stories. Do you know when you end your story?
Yes, because I'm a very linear person and I like establishing what we call beats in the business, whether you're writing a screenplay or you're writing a novel. And I like following the hero's journey structure that I have combined with a romance beat structure. Because in romantic suspense, you have a couple of arcs in there, not to get too technical, but you'll have your romance arc, which has its own beats along the way. You have your meet cute, like in the beginning and all of that. And then you have your subplot, which is the suspense portion. And mine are usually, I have nature as an antagonist, the fires, of course, that create suspense. And I also weasel in a crime in there somewhere, some kind of crime, whether it's theft or it's arson or something like that. So I work that in there. So I'm shepherding these three arcs along. And that's according to beats that I have. And I use a grid board and the whole nine yards and I plot it all out.
So you're working for the feds again.
Now, where did I learn to do that? Actually, the federal work I did was very structured. I mean, there were manuals for things and all of this. And so, I was trained that way. Now, there's another theory of thought behind how you approach creative writing. And that's the people who call themselves the pantsters. Those are the folks that I want to discover as I write. And they just sort of open up their Word document and they just write away. I've tried that and I wind up in Alice in Wonderland down a rabbit hole somewhere. And I'm like, how do I get out of here? You know? I'm just the kind of person that has to have structure and that's how I do it. But everybody does it different.
So if you say you had to throw in a crime in there, old Stink Eye, you know, his crime could be something like a burning brown bag on your doorstep.
Yeah, there you go. A warning. This is a warning.
Yeah, really.
I did some things in the first book that I couldn't change. And then I had to pick up and go for the second. I'm like, oh my God. So I kind of had my character screw up a little bit, but I redeemed him by him becoming a fire investigator in the second book. So I'm like, that was close. So, you know, I have to think more now about what I'm going to do with these characters.
It's sort of like if you make a mistake laying tile or brick in the beginning, you got to carry it to the end and figure out what to do with it kind of thing.
And then you have to get real creative. So,
oh man,
you know, but I have to hand my husband, Mark, credit for plotting because he is the plotmeister. He comes up with, when I, you know, wrote myself into a corner at the end of the first one, he's like, well, just do this, 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 and this. And he just suggests things. And I'm sitting here with my laptop just trying to record all of his ideas. And
Amy's got brilliant ideas. And she always comes out with a little something to get me going. And then when I, you know, and then I'll create it. And then if I get stuck in something, she's just so, it's so effortless for her to go and multi different kinds of things like that. And I'm just
when
not.
When you're too close to it, it's really hard to dive into your brain and open it up and just spew forth all this creativity with ideas. And so that's why I love bouncing stuff off my author friends and my husband and my kids and everybody else who will listen, my dogs, you know, and then they just give me all these ideas. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? You know?
So you bounce the ball off your dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'll look at me a certain way. And then I suddenly get an idea going, oh, it's dog telepathy. Okay. Thank you for that idea.
We've got three books on that we have right now. We've got Alaska Spark, we've got Alaska Inferno, and we've got Alaska Blaze.
Blaze.
So we're waiting for Firestorm. And if people want to find out more information on you, what's the best way? Where do they go?
Oh, well, they could go to lolopage.com. And if you just go to Amazon and type in Lolo Page or Alaska Spark, all the books pop up. I also have a romantic comedy series that I have set in Alaska. And so those are a lot shorter books. They're a lot more, they're less angsty, you know, they're lighthearted. And I wrote one about based on the movies I did here several years ago, and I changed up all the names and everything. And instead of Everybody Loves Whales, I call it Everybody Loves Polar Bears. And it's just been a lot of fun. But the books are in Tidal Wave and Barnes & Noble and most of the bookstores around South Central. They're down in Homer Bookstore. They're all over the place.
Hey,
Black Birch up in Wasilla.
Congratulations for all you do. I know it's not magic to you, but you've busted your chops and you are a good student and you do it. So, you know, you've always been sort of this, well, golly, I just do, you know, and we want to shut up. You know, you're terrific.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do. I really appreciate that. I mean, I've had my times where I just wanted to throw in the towel and go, I need to go sip margaritas on a beach. Why did I give myself homework for life? What is this? You know?
So anyway, you can find three of her books on our Big Alaska Show book review section. And we look forward to talking to you more when you get Firestorm. And all the best. Let's give Lois Simonson, a.k.a. Lolo Page, a Big Alaska Show thank you and continue. Success.
Thank you.
When Mike Ferris sheds his commercial fishing garb, he becomes a business owner and a good citizen in the community. Here he is with our Rootin' Tootin' Rotary Update. So, what is the theme this month, Mike?
Steve, this month in Rotary is youth service. And to me, it's very important. It includes Rotaract, which are college kids, Interact, High School, RILA. I'll talk about that in a second, and Youth Exchange. And I was actually a Youth Exchange student. I tell everybody how important Youth Exchange program was to me. And even though I wasn't on a Rotary Youth Exchange program, it was a private exchange down in Australia. You know, I got to do that. And it just set myself up for a world of travel and adventure. And I still haven't stopped. So lots of great things going on. The Youth Exchange program, you know, peace around the world, one person at a time. We would normally send somebody from one of our clubs to a different country. And normally it's the same country. We get a reciprocal student from that country, not always, but normally how it works. Right before COVID, I think we had 14 kids going back and forth. This last year, I think we sent 5 out. We still maybe took 11 in, but we'll try and get that back in balance as we rebuild that program. But, you know, what an opportunity for these kids, you know, lifelong leadership skills. They get to learn new language and culture. Myself, being in Australia, they spoke English. Life was good for me. All I had to do was figure out how to say, good eye, mate. And I fit right in. But, you know, they got friendships. And especially as you go into Europe, where there's so many countries so close together, they do so much traveling. They are meeting all the other exchange students from many different countries. And just they become a global citizen. So it's fantastic. They normally last, I think I was gone 9 months. From 9 months, a school year to a full year is kind of where they're at. And then both when they're over there, they're staying with host families. When people come over here, we try, not always Rotarian families, but just families that want to have a more experience seeing the world or what's in the world, will have a youth exchange students, normally 3 or 4 months at a time. So
how old were you when you went?
I was 15. I was a sophomore in high school. I turned 16 while I was over there right before I came back. I actually took a driver's ed class, and we're just driving in the parking lot, and I'm on the wrong side of everything. Everything is backwards. I'm not even sure how the instructors didn't totally freak out, and the teachers and people that were driving probably, what is this guy doing on the wrong side of the road? So, but it was all good. Fantastic experience. I still have lifelong friends there that we visit. A couple of years ago, we were down there visiting with them, and just a great opportunity. The other cool thing they do is RYLA, which is Rotary Youth Exchange. And I really like this program. It's normally over weekend, 3 or 4 days. It's for kids that, you know, want to build new skills, build up their confidence. And it's not that kid. Everybody knows a kid, you know, the class president, gregarious, outgoing ones, got the 4.2 GPA. RYLA's for those kids that have potential, that somebody sees something in them. They need that little nudge. They just need a little bit of push and go and take, you know, leaders go through this leadership academy. And what a great opportunity. They just come out of there. These were kids that were maybe weren't used to being around, talking in public, doing stuff. And they have this opportunity in this group to really blossom, just become better citizens for our state.
A question I have, we came out of the pandemic, and I know that impacted everyone, and I'm sure Youth Exchange as well. Where is it now? Is it starting to rebuild?
Yeah, and we're on a slow rebuild. It was a big damper on things. We had 14 kids that were in the program before that we sent out. Now we're at 5. And it's recruiting kids and, you know, parents, you know, got to be comfortable enough that I'm going to let my kid go somewhere across the world. And they don't know. They don't know where they're going when they sign up for the program. It's kind of a random draw. You could be anywhere and everywhere. But it's always high school students. You know, they're normally, you know, 15 to 19. We don't like seniors because they don't have any time when they come back. That sophomore or just maybe going in your junior year is perfect. But that leads us into the last one we do is Interact. And Interact is basically kind of a small Rotary program for high school kids that want to make an impact in their community. And they end up doing a lot of work with other clubs, regular Rotary clubs, and the kids that join it just go, you know, I've had this passion to do community service, and I never knew there was other people in my school that wanted to do it. And it's a great opportunity. I think last year we had 2 Interact clubs. Now we're up to 6. We've added 4 since last year. One that we helped support was one at Diamond High School. And just a great month to be a Rotarian. If you're interested in youth and helping out and the opportunities Rotary provides to those kids to just make them better citizens.
A major point about becoming a good citizen. I have known you for a number of years. It was years later that I found out you were a Rotary Exchange student. And the people I have met over the years who have had that experience have turned into really productive, good citizens like you and a number of others I've met. It really explains why you're so on fire for Rotary. It started with you when you were 15 years old.
The problem parents have is now you've sent a kid away and they're used to surviving in the world, right? Get on a train, travel through 4 countries, do all this. And then they come back and what? I have chores. I have curfew. And it's hard. They've had such an exposure to the world. And then they come back to regular home life. It's always an adjustment for both the parents and the kids as they find that balance again. Yeah. It's a great opportunity. We're glad to, as Rotarians, to be able to opportunities to kids and Rotary to be the month of May to support our youth.
If people want to find out more about Rotary and this youth program,
I would just go to Rotary District 5010 and there'll be a tab that says youth.
And let's give Mike Ferris a big Alaska Show thank you and continued success. So that's our show. We're talking record beards and mustaches with Mike Ford, then talking books with Lolo Page. And by the way, check out our books. You'll find on our book review section at BigAlaskaShow.com with interviews and links. And then there's Mike Ferris, who takes us from commercial fishermen, close calls, to being a past district Rotary governor for Alaska. Talk about land of extremes. Beards, boats, and books. What a great way to start a Saturday morning. And to my baby girl, love you. And Mike Ford, why don't you take us out as you so eloquently do?
All right, Uncle Steve, we want to thank Lois and Mike for joining us. We want to thank you for listening, and we want to thank our sponsors, Neighbors Windows and Doors, Alaska's window experts at 6251 Tunnel, or online at neighborswindowsanddoors.com, and Alaska Enterprise Solution, your authorized Xerox sales agent for Alaska, online at aesalaska.com. Remember, if it's Big Alaska Guests, Big Alaska Adventures, and no good lying three or two tall Alaska tales, it's gotta be the Big Alaska Show. Have a great week, everybody.